Hey guys, it's Lauren, and welcome back to the Rocket Jump Film School podcast, Office Hours. And me, Joey, and Cherish are going to talk about one of our previous videos, the Editing the OF Moment, made by Joey himself. It's one of our favorite video essays, and we're going to answer some of your questions about the video, about editing, and kind of get into our thought process behind it. So if you're interested in editing, it's a good podcast to check out, so hope you guys enjoy.
Rocket Jump Film School, Scene 1, Apple, Take 1, Mark.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Rocket Jump Film School podcast, Office Hours. And November, we are taking off from releasing our normal tutorials. We're doing another podcast month, and that is because we are going to be crazy busy on Hulu related content. That means we're going to have tutorials based on the cool shorts that we've been working on all year and that we are dying to tell you about, but we can't because we're sworn to secrecy under pain of death, and Ben will kill us. I've seen his crazy eyes.
I've seen his crazy hair. So flowing and beautiful.
He lures you in with his beautiful mane, and then
quite a mystique.
When you get too close, he's just like, "I know what you said on Twitter," and then he's like, "Shanks."
I could take him.
So
Cherish will avenge our deaths as soon as we spoil and spill all the beans on the Hulu show.
Yes. but today we are going to kick off podcast month again. We're talking a little bit about the editing essay that Joey put together. I love it.
Woohoo.
BT dubs. It's called, and be warned, this podcast is going to have a lot of language in it because the actual video is called Editing, Creating the Oh Fuck Moment. So we are going to have a lot of F-bombs.
It's going to be a lot of swearing. But it's educational.
It's educational swearing.
Yeah. Fuck.
But it's a super fun video. And I wanted...
Sorry, Mom.
We wanted to... There's a lot of questions that came up about it, and there's a lot of dialogue, and it's really interesting. So we just wanted to delve into it. Yeah. So, Joey...
Hello.
How many clips did we pull for that?
Gosh, you so many that are so many intern. For just a second of actual time. You know, we downloaded full films just to pull that one moment from stuff that, and that takes up a lot of render space. So my computer kept like having a heart attack every time, just because of the amount of full features within the project file.
Mm-hmm.
It was quite a bit. I actually don't know the actual number of clips.
Well, some stuff you hang on for quite a bit, too, which is cool, too.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, I don't even know where the original idea for the oh fuck moment came from. It was all over the place, and it just took finding, like, one cohesive thought to teach a lesson on, like...
Yeah, because I remember it started with, like... the purpose of a cut like the meaning behind a cut.
Yeah, why do we cut and all this
and
other
stuff. And
it
was very, that's such a huge idea, but I think it really clicked when we realized the type of cut that you wanted to focus on.
Yeah, I noticed that there was, things were building to a cut a lot of times or a reveal. And so then it just became about information and how you orchestrate that within a story. And I was learning as I was going too, because I would find things in films that now that I'm looking for that, and you start picking that out, like Reservoir Dogs and stuff like that, to tie it back in with, say, Dr. Strangelove. It's like, this isn't the only time we've done this, so I was looking for another one that sort of does a similar thing.
Yeah, I think your examples are actually what really demonstrate the cohesive, like, technique you're talking about. Because, I mean, like, cutting for the oh fuck moment is not necessarily... obviously the only way to edit, but it is a very specific way that we're illustrating, and all your examples just sell it so well.
Right.
I mean, sell is maybe the wrong word. Demonstrate it so well.
That was the whole thing, is like people maybe might have issues like with the fact that it doesn't teach every nuance of editing or something like that. But let's put this in perspective. Like as film school here, we want to teach something that is almost universal, that anyone could apply to any project that they're doing.
And we have to do it step by step. We can't do a video that's like the secrets of all secrets and nuances of editing the video in 5 minutes. Cause you guys don't want to watch a 16-hour tutorial on the intro to editing.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's like, it's not easy to talk about editing because it was a real struggle, because you want to have something that is relevant, but also something that that people might not have thought of, or something that just almost goes without saying, but saying it just to have it out there so that your subconscious mind might pick up on these things as you're watching a film as an audience. However, to have it then pointed out to you and say, like, that's what they're doing here.
Yeah.
Take note of that and see how you could apply that to whatever film you're doing. And I like dissecting filmmaking through editing. You have to sort of work your way backwards to how it was shot and how it was directed and staged. So it's sort of like my way to look at all aspects of filmmaking through how it's assembled. It was, it's really hard to just talk about because it's so vast.
Yeah. I think editing is especially, like, we always say directing and editing are two hardest kind of disciplines to teach. And I always think of editing as like basically working in negative space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like, you know, you're removing things in order to piece them back together. And that is a hard thing to define because it's not something you're seeing. You know what I mean? You're using the pieces of what everyone else has constructed in order to tie something together. So how do you teach someone to operate with a negative space? You know, it's a really conceptual kind of way of thinking. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, just all you can teach are concepts of that discipline.
Exactly. Yeah.
And a lot of people, like, and this is one of the things I've run into learning how to teach, because that's a whole different skill, is that there's so many times where I was like, this just feels right. And a lot of people who have been working a long time have those skills down as a feeling or a gut thing or like even just a reflex. Mm-hmm. And so you can't work, you have to work way back into your own mind to figure out your own reasoning.
Yeah.
Because you've already figured it out and now it's just like a thing. So it's like, oh, that edit feels right. It's like, oh, wait, how do you actually explain why?
Right.
It's really,
it's really hard.
Essay.
Well, I guess working it backwards again from problems that I've seen in editing is cutting for just no reason or not understanding why. So I guess that became the thrust to try and formulate some sort of thesis on or idea or lesson out of having a reason to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Because people often cut just because they felt like too much time's gone by or something like that. It's like, oh, we need to cut just because we haven't cut in, you know, 10 seconds.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And that's not always like the best solution, you know? So it's, and knowing that and then really trying to, unfortunately, a lot of comments, I'm all over the place just because this is the way my brain is rambling off stuff. In comments, some person said, and this happens a lot in student films also, is that they're cutting because they have to. They're cutting because they haven't rehearsed the scene. They're cutting line by line because no one remembers their lines or their blocking or their this and that, their cues. And that's another thing
it's
that
tough.
You can appreciate more about when they hold on it or when it's very well rehearsed and tight and people, and you can let your actors perform
or
for
like
you.
One takes, yeah. Worth.
That's really impressive. So if you do have a film where that's how the scene is shot and you could do that, I suggest it. Like,
see what feels right,
see
basically.
See what feels right, yeah.
Like, it's funny because I might have mentioned this before, but like movies right now that have the one take is very popular thing. They're very elaborate and blah, blah, blah. It's very impressive. Mm-hmm. But the thing with Emmanuel Lubezki, the cinematographer, he's been doing one long takes since the beginning of his career, but they were very subtle and they really depended on the skill of the actors and the director to really hold a strong image. So like Working Girl, there's this amazing long scene in the women's bathroom where she's like redoing her makeup and Harrison Ford's reflected in a mirror and it's one shot and they just talk and the scene is so tense and interesting. And then he has The Birdcage, which is just Nathan Lane and Robin Williams being themselves.
Yeah.
And they just held on this kitchen shot for like 2 minutes.
Oh, I love it. Yeah, we were talking about...
But you don't notice it because you're picking out where you want to focus and the actors are so interesting that you don't need to cut. You don't have a reason to cut.
It's the shot's dynamic. People are coming in. They're coming out. They're doing all this stuff.
There are no rules to when you have to cut.
Yeah, exactly. It's
unless you're working with crappy footage, which sometimes that's the
cards you're dealt.
When you start overcutting in feature films, or basically you have a scene that is just dialogue that is cut from all different angles and stuff. If you have a whole feature film like that, by the time you get to the end, even if it's 90 minutes, it's just exhausting because you're not realizing it. But as an audience, when you're just getting bombarded with.
And sometimes all these that's what you're going for too.
Tony Scott films, like you're on the ride, you know, Unstoppable and Top Gun even. Like I think Top Gun started just amping up that tension or that energy with insane.
Just the open.
It's all there's all always a time and place and reason to do it. If you're if it's a couple people sitting around having a conversation, maybe not so much. Maybe not. Mm-hmm. Maybe yes. Again, Birdcage is an example. There's so many examples that I would have loved to include in the thing. That's another great example.
Well, there's a lot of stuff that was cut out too that we can talk about. I think like you had a whole thing about Lawrence of Arabia and. You know, knowing your audience about the, you can't watch Lawrence of Arabia on a phone. So how do you edit for a piece of content that you know is going to be mostly viewed on a phone?
Yeah.
Or, that was a super interesting idea
we cut out,
which I think is like a separate thing from what your essay became.
Yeah.
But it's still, so that's an interesting
idea. The idea behind that, which I still think is very important, is to know like how your audience will be seeing the film.
Mm-hmm.
So nowadays, we're watching films on our laptops and phones, and you take a movie like Lawrence of Arabia, which has these vast wide shots and landscapes and things like that, and the actor could be this big on the big screen.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you shrink that down to a phone, and you're losing all of that detail, you know, that
It doesn't have the same emotional impact that it would on a large screen just because of how the shot's framed.
Right, exactly. And all that detail and stuff gets lost. So then I feel like you start seeing more films that just use mediums and close-ups throughout because of how the audience will be seeing it. And mostly on a phone. And
seems to be a pretty recent trend that a lot more stuff, especially online, is close-ups and mediums and stuff. So people's heads fill up most of the frame or their expressions fill up most of the frame or whatever is important to see fill up most of the frame. Because you need to direct the attention in a different way than you could have on a big screen, which is, again, going back to your essay, it's about controlling information, it's about presenting information.
Yeah.
And when you have only a screen this big to work with, you have to choose, like...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can we think of a movie that was, like, last did, like, huge, 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 huge extreme wides like that?
I mean, Coen Brothers still don't give a shit. They know that their movies will be seen at theaters and stuff. True. So I think all...
Western, 310 to Yuma.
310 to Yuma, all these Coen Brothers films, they use the full spectrum of cinematography, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And they commit to it. Wes Anderson.
He still does whites. You're right. Yeah. It's still in his
not as much,
thing,
but like as the Coens, but he has such a big idea of mise-en-scene that like he does still...
Spielberg nails it. You know, they just know how to tell a story.
Bridge of Spies had a lot of... Now that I'm thinking about it, you guys should see Bridge of Spies because it's just classic Spielberg, but his close-ups were very intentional. He didn't use a lot of close-ups. There's a lot of mediums and wides in that film.
Yep. Yeah,
which makes sense. It's really good. Considering the Jaws example.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like if you're gearing your stuff just for... film, or basically you're just accepting that people will see it here. My point at the end of that essay, which we cut out, was to not be discouraged by how people see it. Just know that this, because basically the juxtaposition between these things works and it's proven to work. It's guiding the eye constantly, because you want it. It's good to have all the world and then what's important for the story, like specifically like a close-up in that case. That was a comment on the editing to eyes. How do I like draw readers or the audience's attention? I was like, use a close up, and then it was like, oh yeah,
it's like bam, look at this,
So and then that also tied into creating this essay anyway. But yeah, it's not being discouraged by the fact that no one might see that thing, but just know that on a big screen that stuff looks bomb. Yeah. You're a room or a wide with seven people. Is going to be more interesting than cutting to each person.
You know what's an interesting movie for editing? I don't know actually if it is, but I now that I'm thinking about it, I just saw a Murder on the Orient Express. the Sidney Lumet
classic
version.
Ooh. Yeah, old.
For the it was my the first
I haven't
time
seen
I saw
that
it.
Yet. Yeah.
It
I
is
see it.
Incredible. I mean, that's like one of my favorite books ever. But
it's got a bomb just ensemble cast.
It is out of freaking control. And Kenneth Branagh is possibly doing a remake of it now, which is
that would be
dead
interesting.
On. I know. Can you imagine the ensemble you could get
oh
for that movie nowadays?
God.
But I felt like the editing, like, I mean, you're doing a mystery, which is a very different thing from what, you know, like that genre specifically.
Yeah.
Editing is key. But it was interesting. It was very purposeful editing throughout, mm-hmm. it felt like. Because when you move from, you know, inside Poirot's car into the hallway, and you know, it's just something to think about, I guess.
Yeah.
A movie to watch for purposeful editing.
Definitely check it out, for sure.
Yeah.
Lumet's always on it with staging and working with his actors, like a lot of his stuff feel like plays as he films.
Mm-hmm.
Two examples that I guess the main two that I was thinking that I didn't explain as we were showing them in the video, I'm showing clips of as I'm talking are Memento and Nightmare on Elm Street.
You don't really talk about Whiplash either.
Oh, I didn't talk about Whiplash.
But
yes, so three. Those two in particular, though, I feel like Memento shows how you build a story through close-ups because that's the intro to the film, and using close-ups, unlike, you know, Wise, it's all pieces of a puzzle, right? Mm-hmm. You're not seeing the whole puzzle. You're seeing, like, that bullet, that the blood here, and this and that.
Mm-hmm.
It's different from that. I have no short-term memory. I know who I am. I know all about myself. I just, since my injury, I can't make new memories. Everything fades.
And you're, as an audience, you're starting to really use your brain. You know, what does that mean? How do these pieces fit together?
Mm-hmm.
And that's so basically that was my example of drawing you in through just showing you pieces of information. Mm-hmm.
Like
a
director
time.
Pointing at something to you,
look
saying
this
is important.
Look at that. And as you're just getting shown these little glimpses of things, your brain is just firing on all cylinders. Mm-hmm. So I think that's really important.
Perfect for that story because that's literally what the character's doing. He's
exactly.
taking these tiny bits of information and putting them together in order to see a whole.
Yeah.
So that style works phenomenally and as a theme and as a style, but also but that wouldn't work for other movies.
Yeah.
Like if you wanted to do that in like a comedy, you'd be like, I don't know what's going on.
Yeah. Why am I looking at this? Why is there a close-up of this pigeon?
Yeah.
is that a tooth? Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's random.
Unless it's a parody.
Yeah.
But it just kind of goes to show what editing can do for a particular story. One thing that I think came up in the comments and I thought was interesting is, and you touched on this, in the video, it's like, well, what's the line between directing and cinematography and editing and what, you know, what determines what? Like, what if you didn't have that close-up to choose not to cut to it and that kind of stuff? So there is that kind of overlap where a director should have editing in mind.
Mm-hmm.
But what I really did like about your essay was showing editorial choices within like a larger scene. So like cutting the scene differently could create other outcomes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Entirely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think like Butch Cassidy one is a good example of that because you're on that wide for so long. But you're on that close up for so long and you know that eventually they shoot a wide too. So it's like that scene is covered. There's choices being made there very specifically. And so I think that's when you can see, like, the other shots and all the dailies just going on and then the specific choices being made at specific points, which you call out.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was an incredible example of purposeful editing.
And we especially don't see the man losing to him. This guy assumes Sundance is cheating and challenges him to a duel. Cut. We see a close-up of the gun. Cut. Now I'm going to jump ahead a little bit here. We hold on this close-up until Butch Cassidy comes in and takes it over. These are our two main characters, and we learn everything we need to know about them right here. And when the next cut comes, it's again motivated by story. Butch says,
I can't help you, Sundance.
Cut. Huh? Cut. That's right. Cut. Oh, f**k. Cut wide. See how that works? Bang, 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 bang.
I didn't know you were the Sundance Kid when I said you were cheating.
Those cuts come in rapid succession at work because the tension had already been drawn out. Now the rest of the scene plays out mainly in a wide, contrasting the amount of time we'd spent in the close-up. And yet the tension remains the same. It's a fantastic scene. It's very well balanced, and we'll come back to that.
Yeah, yeah. Purposeful. Like, it's letting the audience get in on what's happening as everyone's learning who Sundance is in that character. The guy doesn't know, you know, mm-hmm. and we don't know who he is until we don't see him until he knows who he is, you yeah. know, and that's
we
such
realize
an
when he realizes, yeah. mm-hmm. and then it's like, ah.
oh, fuck.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. yeah
if we so realized fun. Earlier on, it wouldn't be as interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I like
you don't need it either.
Yeah. No. And the fugitive was the fugitive, right?
Yes.
Was a really good example because they had so many different shots.
Mm-hmm.
They had all the wides and all these close-ups, and they could have used the close-up earlier. They could have done all the close-ups at once and all the wide. Like, that back and forth was an interesting choice because you know they had a ton of coverage because
oh, yeah.
they had to crash a train.
Yeah.
But I the think, way they put it together was yeah. super intense and for reasons that you described.
As I was breaking it down, even looking at it, I realized, like, the music within it,
mm-hmm.
and it was like, there's a chunk of, if we go through shot by shot, it's so musical. It starts out as a extreme wide to extreme close, and then you got back and forth, extreme close, extreme wide. And there's like there's a okay. rhythm there that's like subconsciously just poetic, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's like that's got a structure to it.
Mm-hmm.
And so if
that
you
creates subconscious expectations too.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
And it's got this it's momentum to it, and
yeah.
it's bouncing back and forth, and it's really interesting when you actually just take a chunk of a film and dissect it like
mm-hmm,
that
mm-hmm.
because of how effective it is. If you had one more back and forth in there, it starts to break down, you know? It's like,
well,
it starts to feel too much.
You always do that when you're editing too because you are so specific. I'm sure a ton of editors are like that about the rhythm of what's happening.
Oh, yeah.
And not necessarily, again, to someone who's just viewing it, like if you and I are watching something for the first time, we don't pick up on that rhythm in the details that you do, obviously, because
mm-hmm.
we are not editing it, but it's subconscious, right? And so
yeah.
this idea of rhythm as an editor is maybe something interesting we can explore.
Yeah,
further
it's
on.
Like rhythm mm-hmm. in shot choice and structure, you know, like the way it's built
mm-hmm.
is like visually
So it's not
musical.
Even just like a temporal rhythm,
yeah.
it's a visual rhythm.
Yeah, it's a weird, like, again,
yeah.
you know everything you see, and then you see that you focus on the story, and then you pull it, like, goes wide, macro, back. It's just an accordion, you know,
mm-hmm.
just doing this constantly. And yeah, so I thought The Fugitive, and I don't even know how that even came into my head to pick that scene.
Bridgie, you just
but
watching
I just
it?
Think it's a great movie.
It's a good movie.
Yeah,
it's a
sick movie.
Like, yeah, and I was like, and I didn't want to show like an action scene, like fighting, like an action fighting scene.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
mm-hmm.
it's action could be train derailing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I was like, why not? Let's take a look at how this thing, let's break this down.
Yeah. And yeah, that I think that was a great example. I know a lot of like fist fight and stunts and stuff, you start having to, and this is something you cut out as well,
mm-hmm.
or we're thinking about, is like sometimes your hands are tied with editing, like maybe you're dealing with a stunt double, maybe you're dealing with VFX plates
mm-hmm.
that you have to match, like you can't, like these things are locked in,
yeah.
and the when they are revealed is determined by how they were shot.
Yeah.
So like I think The Fugitive was such a, they had so much coverage and that kind of stuff, that was such a good like choice to use as an example. But
mm-hmm.
if you're doing a scene, and this is the reason why I think Freddie was kind of disappointed that they did an editing exercise with Beach Justice.
Okay.
And they released the footage online.
That was the iPhone video?
I think, no.
Is that the Superman?
No, it's when that guy was running along the ceiling, the rooftop with the huge bag of cocaine, and then Freddie does the bullet, like the hand
yeah.
to the gun thing, which is really funny. Editing
yeah.
made it funny. But they shoot their action scenes so specifically that they're already edited in their head because
yeah.
they, you have to.
You have mm-hmm. to.
The way they move on set. And so they're like, oh, maybe that wasn't the best editing exercise. So there
mm-hmm.
are certain scenes where it's like your hands
That's
are tied.
That's what's hard about editing,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, it's mm-hmm. hard to teach because sometimes it's just...
It's cinematography, it's
just,
directing.
It can only go a certain way, which yeah. is good. Like, most of the time, you want to be thinking that, have an idea of how your story will turn out
mm-hmm.
instead of just like, ah, we'll figure it out later. Like,
yeah.
it's nice
yeah.
to have that
yeah.
planned out and choreographed.
Right. And directing, it's just, I mean, that's a huge part of it too, because I feel like anytime we work with a director that is, it's a great experience with the director when the director sees the edit in their head.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? When they have that plan in place. And obviously that plan can move in a myriad of directions, who knows, for whatever reason. But having that edit in their head gives you, I think, like, a lot of times leads to things like the Jaws example. Yeah. You know, that's like a directorial choice. And if he knew he was going to stay in that wide the whole time while Roy Scheider is in the office, and then punch in on Jaws or the shark attack, like, that saves you time because you know that edit. But that's not as, you know, it's hard because for every awesome example, there's an exception.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Spielberg had the skill and the know-how to know that would sell and that would work.
Mm-hmm.
If he had if he was like, oh, this might be a fun thing to try, he got really lucky.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And sometimes those experiments don't work, and you have to do pickups.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which you find out later in the edit. So a lot of it comes down to experience.
I talk about that too. All right, that we cut out. That was, I would talk about how a lot of times you don't know. Sometimes you don't know all the stuff that you have until you're in the editing room.
Right.
And that's when you need pickups or a second unit or something like that. It's like, look, we need this. Mm-hmm. We need to get this angle of that, that typewriter or something.
Or he could have shot all the coverage in the world of that whole scene and then just in the edit room discovered, oh, I just need to stay in this wide.
Yeah.
And then punch in. And it's just brilliant.
Exactly.
I remember when I first started teaching, that was the big question. It's like, how do I know what I need? How do I know what coverage I need?
Right.
I was just like, you just experience. Yeah. You got to do it. You got to fail at it. Mm-hmm. And the fastest way to know what coverage you need and don't need is to shoot a film and not have the coverage you need, and then you will never make that mistake again.
Oh yeah, there's that. There's definitely that. I hate that.
I learned in film school.
You just like delete your footage and junk, so then you're like, you have half a movie, and you're like, crap.
Because nowadays it's like, you have your standard master wide, over shoulders, over the shoulders, and stuff, but. So you can be a director who covers everything, but you also, you know what I mean? It's like, that's inefficient sometimes. You just can't do that.
Yeah.
So how do you make choices? That's a really good question.
My first feature film I did, I did it in high school. John shot one too, actually, John Carman with Jake. So we shot, and Freddie, I think, we all shot features in high school. That's like where I learned to hate standard coverage. You know, it doesn't necessarily work. It doesn't translate over to every nuance of the story, and if it's just generic, you get your overs because you just assume that's the way to shoot edit and assemble a film. You're gonna miss out. Like, that's not like a go-to reliable formula.
It's not one size fits all.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's just
some movies can really work with it.
Yeah.
Some movies really need something else.
You really need to think about how to visually tell your story and how to assemble it and edit it. You know, like, if you just shoot it all again, it could be because you're constructing it line by line because no one, you know, we didn't have the time to rehearse or do something like that, which you should take the time to do. It'll save you time.
Right.
But yeah, standard coverage isn't like the be all end all answer.
I think Spy is a good example of it, which I thought Spy was fun. The movie was great. But I mean, again, you're dealing with improv performances there, but the coverage is over the shoulders almost the entire time.
It wasn't shot like a spy movie.
Exactly. And it's like, you're doing that. You're accomplishing the over the shoulders for the comedy element of it, but you're also doing a riff on a genre. On the spy movie. And so you want to visually feel like an exciting, glossy spy action movie. And it didn't represent that element at all.
The rhythm felt not like a spy movie. The cuts didn't feel like a spy movie. The cinematography did at some points, but like, it wasn't shot and cut and directed like a spy movie, which is I think it would have been even, I loved Spy.
Yeah.
It was so funny, but I think it would have sold even harder if they had really gone full 100% spy Melissa McCarthy being super awesome.
Yeah,
like,
if you compare that to
Bond.
OSS 117, totally hits the spy, like, kind of zesty, like, overtones really, really well while still being funny. And I love Spy too. I thought it was very funny.
I think I like Spy. It was fun.
Yeah.
And my cousin Chad was like, man, that looks so bad. And I was like, dude, they didn't market that movie like, it's because it isn't like, how do you market a movie as a spy movie when it's obviously not, you can't cut that
into shooting it that way.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's hard to sell it as a good spy movie or a spy movie when all you have to go on is like your comedy look.
Yeah.
You know, totally. That was tough. Yeah. Tough sell, but it's really funny.
That'll be interesting to go into, like, looking at genres and how editing differs and mm-hmm. and how there might be tropes, but they're also genres that flip those editing tropes and do totally. Something totally different that actually sells the genre more. And
yeah. with horror and that genre and Nightmare on Elm Street as that example earlier, I just showed that just because Wes Craven had passed and so that was like kind of like a hello, mm-hmm. thank you for your service in your work.
Yeah.
Your gift to mankind.
Nightmare on Elm Street is just like a phenomenal film to study as a filmmaker because of all the art department and the effects that they have to, it's mm-hmm. really, it's just a feast of like really good filmmaking.
Mm-hmm.
But with the editing and just in the head of the audience, you really need to be in the head of the audience in a horror film because they're just constantly waiting for that jump, you know, that scare. So mm-hmm. when you have an audience who's constantly scanning every frame, like that was my point. It's like with horror, you're always looking at every corner of that from your full frame mm-hmm. of where is that scare going to come from? Because mm-hmm. you don't want it to like, and they always, that's like why you have to be so careful when you craft a horror film.
Mm-hmm.
Because the audience is doing this every time. And that was the whole point that I just wanted to make. I didn't tell you that, but then I jump into that with Alien to sort of get you in that mindset of you're looking, mm-hmm. you're looking, and they're not going to show you. You're
mm-hmm.
looking.
Mm-hmm.
And it's,
yeah. And audience expectation.
Audience expectation.
And being aware and sensitive to it.
And sensitive that. And to be, yeah, to be aware of just the full frame.
Yeah. Well, I think a big another mistake I think with a lot of editors make is not putting themselves in the heads of the audience, and then things get uninteresting.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I think if you keep looking at your edit as a way of maintaining interest or moving the story forward, then, I mean, that gives you another reason to cut, right? So that's motivated as well, because I feel like a lot of times I'm like, man, we could really use. We're just holding on this for no reason now. Like there's, mm-hmm. This is not a motivated, like the lack of the cut is unmotivated. I don't know if that makes sense.
No, it does. Yeah.
That's why I always, suggest to learning directors is to hire an outside editor because they will, do a first pass that you wouldn't necessarily think of because you're very close to the material and you want to hold on that beautiful shot that took you 4 hours to get. And they are coming into this movie as an audience. They're the first to see it and they're going to show you what they want to see and what they got out of the story. And they might bring something to the story that you didn't think of and would get rid of information that you thought was necessary but actually isn't necessary. And they're like, I don't need that to understand it. I think we should just skip it.
Yeah.
And having that collaboration just makes your story that much like stronger because you have a first audience in there helping you craft
totally. That's a really good point.
Yeah.
I feel like what's also interesting about editors too, man, they're just so interesting editors.
I just love editors. They're great.
That editors have such a have to have such a distinct point of view, you know? Like I feel like when we shoot stuff, we have all this footage and then we just give it to you, Joey, and then it comes out a video that's entertaining and distinctly you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know?
It's like, thank God we have the Joey machine. We can just feed stuff and he can bring in the funny stuff out. Yeah. It's like, yes!
Yeah, I mean, like, when we shoot it, it's like sometimes really straight-laced. There's, you know, we're just getting the information out. We're just teaching the lesson.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then you put your spin on it through your edit brain and it comes, and you find the funny spots or the areas that breathe. It's fascinating.
And you know what we'll need for an edit. Mm-hmm. Like I still don't think that way that much because I'm focused on getting the shot and lighting it and that kind of thing. And it's like, oh, this will cut together. And it's like, actually, no, like I can see where this is going and we need you to do this funny face thing. Yeah. And I'm like, why? And you're like, just trust me. And I'm like, okay. And then usually it just works.
It works.
Because you already have the edit in your head.
The edit food.
I think
edit food, you call it.
We're obviously just doing this and we crack each other up every day and we don't take ourselves too seriously, even though what we teach about, we're very passionate about, you know what I mean? This is like a good line of, we keep it fun because you don't want it to ever feel like work. You know, we're making movies here. We're telling stories and you want your stories to be good. You want the lessons about how to tell a story to be good. You know, everything just wants to, so
don't sweat the small stuff.
We encourage like going with the goofy take. You know, like when we were cutting the trailer, the whole, like, Lauren, you just practicing saying rocket jump was like hilarious and just what we needed. You know, it's just like the personality of you know, who we are.
We are Rocket Jump. Right. I was like, I can't believe you kept that in. You're like, nope, you it works.
Take. But yeah, I was like, Lauren, that's the best take. Like,
right.
Yeah.
But like makes... a lot of, well, you know, if someone else edited any of those things, if you and I did a pass at editing any of those things, it would have come out totally different.
Sure.
And yeah. No, not a sign of better or worse, although I think you're probably the better editor, Joey. But you do embarrassed. Okay. But that's what's, that's what's really interesting, is that as an editor, you have to have this point of view. And I think that applies to bringing an outside person in, because you're hiring someone for their perspective, which is really interesting. You know, this like this kind of vague thing. And how do you get a sense of what someone's point of view is as an editor?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And before that's, you go in.
I liked the audition video. That was like a fun way to like sort of have an idea of like how do you show something with and make it interesting. So it's like, you need a call sheet, and then we have like bloop, we just do simple jump cuts like to having a call sheet there now, and it
was a fun thing
works,
to play with,
you know. And it was like, it was something different that we hadn't done, and how we were teaching and doing like these sort of reenactments. That was really it was really goofy learning experience right there.
Fun.
And Kate obviously killed it.
Yeah. Kate's a beast.
Kate's so good.
Yeah. You just point a camera at Kate and then it just like magics. Go.
Yeah.
And it's fine.
Yeah.
It's great.
That's one that I think it was fun to just sort of figure out as we were going. Like, here's this idea. Let's just start having these things just appear as we were talking about it.
And I remember one of the, we'll probably have to wrap this up here in a second, but I remember one of the questions at one of our workshops at LA Public Library that we did last year, which are all online in our earlier videos on our channel. But one of the questions was like, well, how much control should I have in the edit? Like, if I'm the director, what vision and blah, blah, blah. And a lot of young directors, I think, are scared to have an editor or cinematographer come in and take control of more stuff than they'd like, or have more input than them, because you feel like, oh, well, I'm not a strong director, or I don't have as much control. But it's just like, I think the sign of a strong director is knowing when to go with the better idea or with somebody else's gut feeling, or if, you know, it's your directorial choice to choose someone who's going to bring that specific thing into your film. It's like, if you can trust other people to do their job well, you're the person who's bringing all these people in together. And so if you have an editor that does better cuts than you, you don't have to be like, oh, but I'm still the director, so I have to make decisions and make a cut just for the sake of being the director. It's like, it's a good, if someone's doing something good, encourage that.
Yeah. Or sometimes it's also sticking up for your vision too. Mm-hmm. It's I think it's just ultimately being able to make a choice. And then it's making your bed and sleeping in.
Yeah.
Is that the term?
Well, and a good editor will respond well to a strong director who's like, actually, I see what you're doing, but the vision for the scene is this, and I really want that. And then that back and forth can bring something really good.
That's the struggle that I faced just cutting this thing together, is like, because you have all these things that you want to talk about, but the editor in me is saying like, well, this video isn't about that stuff. So then you get rid of that. Mm-hmm. And then you just start whittling it down. It's not about this. We don't need that. And then, I really like
that thought. Kill your own babies.
Yeah, but it's just like, it doesn't fit anymore. So you have to, and as a director, you need to acknowledge that. You have to listen to both sides, like, of your head, you know, especially if you're trying to do both. Just be honest with yourself. Mm-hmm. You know, don't cling on, like, nothing's precious. Mm-hmm. You shouldn't, like, sure, it is, but it isn't.
Yeah.
You know?
Is there anything else about the edit essay we should cover before?
Ugh, I think
the things we didn't
the
mention
major,
or questions
the major questions that popped out to me, I think I addressed a little bit of some of.
That's a good follow up.
If you have a question about any of the movies, turn on your closed captions.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I see a couple
whenever
of comments
about
that.
Whenever we have clips, we put Cherish spends a long time.
Yeah.
Typing in all of the
I'm very proud
the movie.
Of the CC.
She really likes doing it, apparently.
I like it.
You like
no, but then I literally go in frame by frame and adjust it. It's like I'm very, very, particular.
Yes. So these are the best closed captioning titles you will ever see on YouTube. I'm serious, though.
There might be typos.
There might be typos. But all of the movies are listed. You just hit the CC button on the bottom right, and you'll see all the movies that we use, because we want you to watch them. You should go and rent them or buy them or just whatever you want to do.
Yeah, legally acquire them.
Yes.
Yeah.
Through.
Did I wink? No, I didn't.
Wink.
Wink. No,
did
watch
you just
these movies.
With your eyes?
No, I really didn't.
Wink.
One.
Wink.
Double. It's
double wink.
Double wink. It's not a blink if you do them separately.
If you have any questions or any other, I don't know.
We're in the forums.
Yeah, we're in the forums. Twitter. Anything else about editing, just ask. I'll try and answer it. But again, there's really no rule book for this thing.
We're going to be doing just so much more, because this is not our one editing video. Yeah. I think a lot of people get worried. It's like, oh, but you didn't cover it. It's like, next year is going to be super fun
Baby
and interesting.
Steps.
We're going to do more of a structured curriculum. We're going to have step-by-step-by-step stuff, more introductory stuff, more film school type structured stuff. We're going to cover it. And if you guys, you feel free to keep suggesting stuff, or I would really love to see this. If we don't respond to you, don't worry. We've heard it. We've added it to the list of requests.
We read all the comments.
We read all the comments. We always add stuff that's oh, that would be an interesting thing. A lot of our follow-up videos are always stuff that you guys have asked us. So more is coming. Especially for editing, for everything.
Yeah. Rocket Jump Film School, more stuff.
More stuff. Not making it worse.
With more stuff.
With more stuff. We've expanded our motto.
Yeah, our log line.
That's it.
Our tagline.
Sweet.
So, Cherish, do you remember your little
I don't
sign off.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. So, okay.
I don't think that she does.
We're going to sign off now. I'm going to do it. Ready?
Okay.
You ready? Okay. So, thanks for listening, guys. This is Rocket Jump Film School. Not making it worse with more stuff. We'll see you next week. Podcast.
Yep.
Da-da-da-da-da.
I don't think that was the right
totally
jingle.
Right.
Done.
No, I don't
totally
think
right.
So.
Thanks. Okay, bye.
Fade out.